All right, welcome to Real Estate and Beyond. And today we have the pleasure of interviewing Tammy Sims with the Institute for Luxury Home Marketing. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be in the studio with you.
I love having in-studio guests, and it is such a coincidence that you happen to live in St. Pete.
That's right. That's right. Not too far.
Not too far. How are you liking the Florida weather right now?
Oh, this is the time of year when we wonder if it will ever end. But we know that it will.
One day. What are you seeing right now in the local real estate market?
You know, quite honestly, I am seeing crickets right at the moment. And that's been more so in the last several weeks than all summer. And so all summer, things were, you know, not breakneck speed, but things were kind of happening. And all of a sudden, it's like absolute crickets on every type of product and every location. And so I'm just kind of keeping my eye out to see what the next shift is going to be and think about how to correlate that with the behaviors of the consumers in the market and how to plan for the future.
Right, right. And something that has taken effect during the recent weeks is also the new NAR settlement repercussions, if you want to call them that, and the new buyer broker agreement requirements and the removal of the buyer broker compensation from the MLS.
That's correct.
So fun times.
Absolutely. It's been really interesting to talk with different people in different phases of their buying prospect and their different reactions to it. And I think the explanation is the most important thing. And it's been interesting to me because here in this area, we often have relocations. So we've got clients that are coming in from other markets that have a property to sell. Or I also have an instance right now where I've got a listing coming on where my clients have actually just put a contract on something in New Mexico. And in all of those instances, they're clients that I have a relationship with. And so they come sit down and talk to us first, and they ask us to explain what they're going to hear on the other end of their transaction. What's it going to feel like to have this conversation as a seller with different choices and the way that things are articulated? How is it going to feel for them to be the buyer? And what we're hearing back from our clients is that they're getting very, very, very different levels of interpretation and explanation. And so that's really something that I think is going to be the biggest challenge in our industry is everybody really having a clear grasp on what's happened, what that means to the clients, and then, of course, the whole conversation about being able to demonstrate our value, particularly for buyers that never really kind of had it in their face that they might have to pay straight out of pocket for our services. And so those value propositions and understanding the process and being able to explain it is where all the world is right now.
We're seeing that too quite a bit, and I think that you nailed it when you said that it's about how to communicate, how to grasp it, and then communicate it, because we're seeing a lot of instances where there's just flat-out miscommunication around it, mm-hmm. and a lot of agents are not understanding how it's working, which is mind-boggling, given the amount of time that has been spent discussing this topic on every forum available.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of interesting to see how it'll all play out. But I think that especially in the luxury price point, it's not as big of a deal because the buyers there understand that you are providing a service and they need to pay for that service.
Absolutely. I got a signed buyer broker agreement earlier today from some very sophisticated clients that I'll be going out with this weekend. And this weekend is even just a preliminary. And they understood that they needed to sign this agreement before we could even just go cruise neighborhoods. But a big point of difference there is that these folks have relocated for executive positions around the country, and they have bought and sold real estate in states where the buyer broker agreement has been mandatory for years and years. So it wasn't a foreign topic to them. And they kind of thought it was odd that everybody was having a difficult time getting their hands around it.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Institute for Luxury Home Marketing. I am a member, and I have seen you on various calls and Zooms and things, and I always enjoy them. Mastermind sessions that you have with a certain tier in the group, those have been amazing. And I find that it is an incredibly collaborative group of agents that focus on luxury real estate. So I wanted to give the floor to you for a moment to explain what the Institute is and what it does.
Sure. And I'm glad that you feel that way, because that's how I feel about it as well. So I am in my 18th year as a trainer for the Institute. And my mother was one of the very first members, one of the very first to take the training. And back at that time, there wasn't a brand agnostic, industry-wide accepted standard for luxury training and a designation. And so the founder of the Institute, who's a woman named Laurie Moore Moore, who is a lifelong role model of mine, decided that she was going to create this. And she was being hired at the time by all of the different brokerages to develop luxury training for their brand. But if someone chose to leave a brokerage, then they didn't get to take that certification or designation, as it ultimately became, with them. So there was a need for a cross-brand, something that belongs to the real estate professional and isn't specific to the brand. So over the last more than 20 years now, we have maintained curriculum that focuses on the basics to help people succeed, to help real estate professionals take their business to the next level, and to recognize the success of agents who are producing. So one thing that I want to make clear is that in order to join the Institute, to take the training, which is the step that makes you a member, you do not already have to be producing in the upper tier. In fact, it's an excellent tool for someone who has their eye on that segment of the market, and they can use the training and their experience as a member to build the skills and the confidence that will take them to those successful transactions. So there's a wide variety of levels of experience and production of our members, and that goes back to that collaboration piece. We have a members-only platform for communication, and our members are not afraid to share.
And that's something that I love, is the really successful ones never have a problem sharing. They always want to share their knowledge and see others succeed as well. And that's just such a great mindset to have, and such a great culture that you've been able to build and maintain within the Institute as well.
I think it's so important. And it goes back to the old saying, a rising tide raises all ships, right? If we share with each other, if we can each take responsibility for being the most professional that we can be, and for sharing that and helping to elevate the professionalism and therefore the perception of our industry. I don't know if you know, but not everybody has such a high opinion about realtors. So we can all take a role, an active role in that, by making sure that we're sharing what we can to help everyone in the industry to be the best that they can be and to provide the most exceptional service to buyers and sellers.
So going back to what the Institute offers, and it is brand agnostic, but at the same time, a lot of the luxury brands from different brokerages are aligned with that training. So for example, with Realty One Group, the One Lux brand is aligned with that training. And if you take the training through the Institute or through One Lux, which is at a discount, then you automatically get membership in both. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. And it's an example of one of the types of partnership that works so effectively. So for example, your brand has a particular culture that they want to foster. And it goes hand in hand with the principles that the Institute teaches. And so instead of having to come up with all of your own materials, you have the opportunity to embrace training that allows people to then utilize the One Lux brand to put together a whole package. So this exists for a few of the different brands, and to me is a testament of how well respected the training and the Institute is to have that level of participation and partnership within the industry.
Well, and I always tell my agents that the when they ask about luxury training or luxury designations, that really the Institute is the go-to. In my mind, it's the only go-to in the industry where it's worth something, because there's so many designations and certifications out there that don't really mean anything. And I feel like this is kind of nationwide recognized as the certification, the designation that really matters.
And right, the industry standard, gold standard, if you will. And that leads me to want to make sure that everyone understands the difference between certifications and designations. So certifications are given in instances where someone completes education. For example, you've got a class for a day, you complete the class, you get a certificate of completion, right? And the designation comes into play when it's a combination of education and production. So that goes back to my comment about any real estate professional can take the training and become a member of the Institute, but in order to earn the designation, there has to be that proven production that's based on the benchmark luxury price point for where the property is located, right? You know that what your dollar buys you in Beverly Hills is very different than what it buys you in Lake of the Ozarks, right? So there's that distinction. But when you're interacting with other real estate professionals that have the designation, or when you're looking to send a referral, right, your trusted clients and you want to put them in the hands of someone who you really trust will take care of them, that's a level of confidence that not only have they taken the classes, but they're actually walking the walk and that they have experience in that price point.
And that's one of the benefits I wanted to discuss with you that I've personally benefited from as well, is that not only does the Institute connect top producers in the luxury market across the nation so that you have a referral network at your disposal, but you also get to know these people a little mm-hmm. bit. And I don't know about you, but I feel a lot more comfortable referring somebody that I have had some sort of interaction with and know.
Absolutely. So, for example, the members-only platform that I mentioned earlier, the Institute Network, so that has different groups and different interfaces, and people are actually having conversations, getting to know one another, sharing. And then for those who have earned the CLHMS designation, there are two additional tiers of membership. The guild recognition is given to those who've earned the CLHMS and are producing in the $1 million+ arena in their marketplace. From there is a guild elite level that is the only additional cost membership level, and it is designed to engage those of our members and CLHMS designees that are producing in the $2 million-plus area. And so there are different conversations that are relevant for different levels of performance and different price points in various different markets. And so we love that we have the opportunities to share through webinars and masterminds and all sorts of other different vehicles, tools and education in an ongoing manner that allow people to engage, to meet them where they are, as they say, and to really try to hone in on the things that are going to be the most valuable to the members.
And that's something that I did want to mention as well. First, I want to give a shout out to John Simmons, one of my favorite elite members in the Institute, because he's just such a wonderful down-to-earth human who produces at the very highest tier and shares everything.
Absolutely. John is one of my favorites. Absolutely.
And I actually was able to give him a referral a couple of weeks ago in Colorado, and I wouldn't have known to turn to him if I had not come across him in the Institute training. So that was really wonderful. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was that in this the highest tier group where we do the monthly masterminds, I find that there's just so much information that's practical and really down to the very, very details of how each agent is succeeding that they're willing to share, that there's just so much to learn, and it's actually really entertaining. So you're doing a good job with those.
Excellent. It's important to keep people engaged, and so I appreciate that. But those types of mastermind dialogues, and I think it's important for anyone in our profession to find those kinds of opportunities, whether it's in their local market area, whether it's a regional, whether it's a virtual thing, but to have that kind of open sharing, best practices, wants and needs, those are the things that really make us all better.
Well, and one thing that I do as a broker is I take the nuggets that I pick up from those conversations and then I put them into my training here at the brokerage, which is great because then even the agents that are currently only aspiring to move to the luxury market, they get a little bit of a taste of what's involved in that, you know, the practical aspects of how the business is being run in a different manner at that level.
I think that's great.
I've gotten really good feedback for it. And I'm like, yep, Tammy said this. John said this.
Yep.
So give credit where credit is due.
And I think it's important when you can really tie it back to somebody who you've seen face to face, that you've spoken to, that you feel confident in. Those are really important factors in building trust and in providing training and helping your realtors be better.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I think is important too is that there is a lot of data and a lot of tools that are at the disposal of the members of the Institute. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it may be a little bit underutilized. But I wanted to get a little bit of an understanding of what kind of things do members get access to once they complete the training and join as a member.
Oh, my gosh. There are pages and pages and pages and pages. I'll start with learning opportunities because we've already kind of touched on that. So there are webinars on a variety of topics. For example, tomorrow I'm going to be on the audience side of a webinar that is talking about the current state of luxury home insurance, right? Mm-hmm. That's not something that we talk about very often, but really specific types of webinars like that, different skill set types of education. So all of the tools that are in the members portal, they all have a how to use this video. Most of them with me telling them how to use it. But there are strategies for managing smart home technology. There are strategies for using price banding as an approach to helping determine what's the best market area for you to farm, right? To invest your time in, or how to counsel sellers and or buyers better in a different way rather than just hitting the button in the CMA cloud. There are preferred rates for advertising and services that are very specific to the upper tier, right? And I think one of the things that makes the Institute's benefits unique is that that it's geared towards the higher end marketplace. So there's lots of resources out there for realtors. There are lots of shiny objects. We could spend money like we're going out of style. But part of the investment in maintaining your membership in the investment includes that. And I think they've done the math. It's some insane number of tens of thousands of dollars of tools available. There's tools that will allow you to help prospect for higher end individuals or learn more about individuals that you're working with. Gosh, I can't, on demand, I cannot go through the whole list. There's even online expense tracking and mileage tracking tools that are free for members. So it is deep and rich, and I think that's one of the things that also makes a difference between the value of a designation and a membership more so than a piece of paper or being able to put the initials after the name. It is really a much bigger thing than just taking a class and getting some extra letters.
One thing that comes to mind from that is that there's, within the portal, mm-hmm. One of the, I think, most used things that's in there is probably the luxury market report.
Oh, absolutely. How could I have not mentioned that already? So the Institute produces a monthly report that gives the current status and trends and outlooks for the luxury real estate market throughout North America, so the U.S. and Canada. And so for over 500 individual markets that represent the largest shares of luxury real estate around the continent, looks at trends just specific to performance in the upper tier, right? So you get lots of averages from lots of state associations and regional associations, but really breaking it apart into what's happening in the upper tier is an important factor. And so for each of those individual marketplaces, which are kind of like a regional metro area, they break it down even further and they illustrate what's happening by price band. So for example, is the million to a million and a half price band performing differently than the $5 million plus? Right? This is really eye-opening to look at it in that way so that you can communicate more effectively with your sphere of influence. So that market report is useful in a variety of ways. I use it to share information with the CPAs, financial advisors, wealth managers, to keep me top of mind for their referrals by providing this material that's a benefit to their clients. I share it monthly with my sphere of influence, particularly those who own homes in more than one marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so they find it incredibly helpful because anybody that's communicating with them about real estate in one of the markets that they own in is not talking about how that is different or similar to the property that they own in other areas. Mm-hmm. So it is an incredibly valuable tool, and it comes out every single month, and that's the key. It's done, right? It's gorgeous, it's done, and you can just utilize it, right? I have so many projects that I have started and just want to make it a little more perfect, a little more perfect, and it never gets done. So that work is done for all of the members.
And that is a great way to approach both your sphere as well as prospect, and I think you can even use it for farming, right?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
So I think that a lot of agents who are not yet in the luxury space or that tier may find this conversation a little bit intimidating and think about, how do I get to the upper tier? So mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit about the threshold, because it's not really that high in terms of earning a luxury designation, especially if we just focus on where we are at, the, you know, Pinellas County.
That's
in Florida. The dollar amount of what's considered an upper tier for purposes of qualifying for the institute is actually fairly low. Is that correct?
It can seem that way perceptually. It is essentially based on the 90th percentile. So historically, we've referred to it as the top 10%. And so if you take all of Pinellas County and divide up all of the transactions for the last 12 months and then draw a line at the top 10%, you'll find that it's kind of surprising, because while you may see more media attention on the $5 and $10 million sales, there's an awful lot more of a more mainstream bread and butter product line. So really it comes into play, I think at last count, I think it was $670,000.
That somewhere sounds in about there. Right. Yeah.
Now, the Institute has a minimum threshold that will never go below $500,000. And so that's where you are if you're in an area where the luxury sales, if you will, are really few and far between. But there are some markets where the qualifying figure is well over $1 million. So Toronto is one that comes to mind, and Naples, Florida is another mm-hmm. one that comes to mind. So it really is dependent on the market area that you're producing in. But I'll tell you that $1.5 million properties in Naples are about as common as our $600,000-$700,000 properties. So it's all relative. But going back to your point about agents who aren't yet producing in that area feeling a little intimidated, one of the first things that we say in the training, and one of the hallmarks of our belief system, is that you don't have to live the same lifestyle in order to be successful and to provide excellent service to upper tier clients. Instead, it's a function of your competencies and your confidence. If you build those competencies, that confidence will come naturally.
True. And another thing is that you don't have to live the lifestyle, you have to understand the lifestyle.
That's right. That's right. You do have to understand it. And so that's where the continued emphasis on learning, right? What are the trends? What are the What are the hot buttons in the market? And that goes back to the luxury market report, which really takes a deeper dive into what are the motivations, right? What are the pain points for people who are buying and selling in the upper tier? What are the opportunities they are looking for? And trends that are very helpful in communicating to your sellers and to your buyers the perceived value of what they might think differently about. So really gives you the opportunity to expand your mind and to really do a better job of understanding more than just the transaction.
Well, I think another component to that also is that luxury is just not a price point. It's a lifestyle.
It is.
And a lot of the time you hear agents that are performing in the upper tier say that, well, this is one of my favorite quotes, your vibe attracts your tribe. And so we talk a lot about, even if you're not into golfing or boating or polo, that you need to understand that a lot of the buyers in that upper tier are. So even if you're not into it, learn about it and speak their language and figure out how to have conversations that are meaningful that show that you understand the lifestyle.
That's right. That's right. We spend a lot of time talking about staying on top of trends, both amenities that buyers are looking for in the upper tier and also understanding the features that have a level of expectation in luxury homes so that you can describe them appropriately, moldings, if you will. Why does the range have red knobs, for example, right? So your awareness of the brands and the amenities and the finishes that you're going to be encountering are part of that whole competence that that we talked about.
For sure. And another thing that I think is interesting that most realtors that have not yet entered that luxury space don't necessarily understand, and part of this may be because the market got so crazy at some point that the home, regardless of price point, would pretty much sell by inserting it onto the MLS.
That's right.
And
that's
those days
right.
are gone.
Yes, exactly.
They didn't exist before and they haven't come back after.
Right, so. Exactly. I don't remember a time other than that when I had to advise my sellers that when we put their house on the market that they needed to go book a hotel room on the beach for the weekend because there was going to be that many people in and out of their house.
Right.
So that was a little interesting. And it was also interesting to adapt as that changed. Because there's a lot of sellers that still have the perception that things are happening in that way. And now I'll tell you from personal experience that we still have a lack of inventory, right? It may be better than it was, but it's still lower than normal, and there's pent-up demand. So if a property is priced appropriately, in great condition, in a great location, it will still sell quickly and for top dollar. I saw an instance recently, a home that I showed for a client that has been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And we went to see it within a couple of hours of it being listed. And there was a complete train of people waiting for their next appointment. And while the property didn't necessarily, and this one was about, I think it was about $750,000, right? And it didn't necessarily fit for my clients, but I knew that it was going to sell quickly, right? It was in gorgeous condition, just missing some of the unicorn parts that my buyers are looking for. And sure enough, it went under contract by the next day, and it sold for almost $100,000 more than they're asking. So that situation can still exist if all of those factors are correct. But if any of those pieces of the formula are out of sync, then we're seeing things back to 3, 4, 5, 6 months on the market, right? I remember right. when things were crazy, if we suggested taking a 6-month listing agreement, we'd be laughed out of the room.
Oh, yeah.
So now that's back really the norm.
Yeah. Well, something that I think is relevant that we talk about a lot, but it wasn't relevant for just that short period of time when the market got crazy is that there is a difference in marketing and selling a luxury property versus a lower tier property. There are differences that if you're going to be operating in the upper tier, you need to know and understand and implement. And John is big on this.
That's right. And John's materials are absolutely impressive.
Impeccable.
And John's dealing with a lot of very large properties, right? So I could probably fit six of our million-dollar houses inside one of the types of properties that he's working with, let alone the acreage. But it's going to take longer. It needs to hit the emotional buttons, the lifestyle buttons of a buyer who may not even have known that they were looking for something. And so there's advertising distribution, there's social media exposure, but everything has to be of the highest quality possible. And it has to focus on the lifestyle, right? It is so not about brick and mortar bedrooms and baths in the upper tier. It's about what unique lifestyle can someone expect to experience in a particular property, and really showcasing that versus focusing on the specifications.
Right, and that's interesting because it's not, just as you said, it's not so much about the property itself, it's about the lifestyle that comes with the property. And it's a different way of marketing because in a lower tier, it is about the property. It's all about the property.
Yeah, it's about meeting very specific basic needs in the entry-level tier and even in the mid-price points, right? It's about what do I have to have rather than in the upper tier, especially as the price point rises, what is it that I want to have?
And it goes so much beyond the property. It goes to the neighborhood. It goes to the amenities, as you mentioned. It goes to, in certain areas, what kind of fishing opportunities are there? What kind of skiing opportunities are
That's
there
right.
around the property?
Yep.
And like you said, sometimes they're buying a property they didn't even know they wanted or needed because they're drawn to that lifestyle that's being
right.
marketed. So there's definitely quite a big difference between how you market that type of property mm-hmm. versus a lower tier home.
That makes me think of another facet of being successful in the upper tier that's critical in marketing those properties to people who don't necessarily know that they're looking for them. And that is the relationships that you build with other high-end real estate professionals in your marketplace, right? Having the kind of relationships where you can call them up on the phone and say, hey, I've brought this property to market, and I know it's unique. It's probably not going to fit what somebody's looking for on paper, but could I invite you for a visit, right? So we've got brokers open events and that sort of thing. That's great. But a personal phone call, one-on-one visit, right, can make all the difference in the world. And then if you've experienced the property, right, this is one of the challenges of not oversharing in your public marketing, particularly the MLS, because people can talk themselves out of going to see the house. And sometimes it's about how it makes you feel mm-hmm. when you walk in the front door. So if you can get the other successful luxury real estate professionals in your marketplace to share with one another those opportunities, you stand in the house and you go, you know who would love this? Oh my gosh, right?
Right.
And those are the unexpected moments. Those are the nuances. And so you're not just dropping a line in the water and just waiting for the fish to come, right?
Right.
So you've got to stir up the interest. You've got to chum the water if we're going on the fishing analogy. So it's really important. It takes more effort. It takes more money to mm-hmm. effectively market in the upper tier. But the rewards can be absolutely great. And there's lots of different ways to approach that. Strategically based on whatever your budget is, right? So it shouldn't be something that that deters you if you're not already in that space. There's some creative ways to overcome that.
I've come across a few agents over time who were very deliberate about wanting to sell luxury real estate, but were starting with no experience, just a dream, as it were. Mm-hmm. And it's been fascinating to watch them succeed. And it's a lot of it has to do with pure determination.
Yes.
But in the upper tier, there's going to always be agents who have already been successful and they have funds at their disposal mm-hmm. that they can utilize to effectively market properties mm-hmm. and prospect and all of that. But for the ones that are just starting out, I found it really interesting. I spoke to an agent who said that when he first started, he didn't he had a, I don't remember what the car was, but it was just a sedan, right? Mm-hmm. And he said that now he drives a car that fits into the lifestyle of his clients. But when he first started out, it was a completely different story. But he made sure that every time he went to show a property, that car was sparkling clean, and he was wearing a suit no matter how hot it was outside.
Yeah.
And he just, I guess, dressed the part, as it were. And back in the day when I used to work for a law firm, the management always used to say, don't dress for the job you have, dress for the job you want.
That's right.
And I think that's so true also in real estate, is if you decide that that's the tier you want to get to, start dressing the part.
Right. And, right. And that looks differently for different people. You still have to be authentic to your unique personality, and that's something special about our industry, is that we don't have to fit into a banker's slot, just using that as an example. But it varies by different part of the country, right? I want to go back to the point that you made, that the car was clean, put together, and I think that also goes to your attire, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be flashing brand names. You just have to be put together. You have to be well-groomed. You have to be confident in how you look, and not overdo it based on your market. I've had clients who've said, Tammy, would you please not wear a suit when we go out next, right? Like, you're making me feel bad. We're in Florida, and, you know, we're on vacation, and we're buying our vacation home, right? We don't want to feel like we're going to the bank. And so to some degree, you play into that. But, of course, that takes some experience of understanding that. When I go to Miami, that's very different, right? It's a right. very different style. And if we're going to talk about John again, right, in his neck of the woods, it's a really nice shirt with a pair of jeans and really, you know, nice cowboy boots, right? So it's going to be totally different based on where you are. But comes down to just being just put together. I think that's the key.
Right.
And your vehicle as well, right? So I could drive anything that I want. I'm kind of stingy with my funds and prefer to spend them in different ways. So I have a Chevrolet Traverse. And by the way, I just got a new one a week ago.
Oh, right? Congratulations.
So it's the fourth one that I've had. I love this vehicle. It's a great real estate cruising vehicle, but it's a Chevy, right? And I had some clients who flew in on their private plane to look at some properties here, secondary properties, of course, and I picked them up at their very, very fancy hotel, and they got in, and they said, wow, what kind of car is this, right? Like, I don't know what this is, but it's really nice. It's really comfortable. And they were like, it's a Chevrolet? Wow, right? But perfectly clean, really nice ride, good looking, put together. And so it's not about flashing brands necessarily.
Right. It depends on the recipient too.
That's right.
I always get the comment about my heels when I'm walking around in gravel and I'm, you know, they're like, Chris, can you like not wear heels? Like you can't even make it. And I'm like, I'll make it. It'll be fine.
I think the key to that is having different shoes in the car.
This is a good point.
Right. Always back up. It was so funny. Every time that I'm shopping for a car, incidentally, I have stymied some salespeople over the years because I'm like, so I need to know where the stash, like where am I going to keep the toilet paper? And they look at me and they're like, what are you talking about, lady? And I'm like, look, you got all this nice cargo space, but there has to be the hidden thing because I am a real estate professional. I need to have toilet paper in my car. And they're like, oh, so in that little secret stash, there's extra umbrellas, flip-flops for if I have a shoe accident, right? There's extra rain ponchos. There's all sorts of things, right? Big, hefty garbage bags. You just
and
never know,
toilet paper.
Right? Toilet paper, paper towel, all those things, right? So here we're talking about kind of the glamorous side of things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I will tell anybody listening that being a real estate professional, you're going to do the same sort of crazy stuff in the higher price point as you do in some of the lower. So always be prepared, right?
Right.
So that's a fun little fun fact about my vehicle.
That actually brings me to another point about sometimes working in the upper tier is actually easier than working with clients in the lower tier for a variety of reasons.
And I sometimes remind myself when I do a favor for somebody that takes me out of my norm. This happened really recently. And interacting with the clientele and sometimes the other real estate agents, and I consciously said real estate agents there and not real estate professionals.
Yes, I caught that.
Because there can be a big difference. The lack of respect for people's time, for professionalism, the lack of understanding of the process can be painfully evident in some of the lower price points, right? And I'm sorry that is, but every once in a while I'll be reminded that that there's often just a different level of respect and appreciation for our time that comes in the upper tier. Not always. I had a seller once who wanted me to drive an hour each way to replace the flowers on the entry foyer for their absentee property while I had it on the market.
Which you did.
Yeah. I did not, actually.
No?
I did not, because
really?
They also wanted me to pay personally for the lawn care and the pool maintenance, and they thought that it would give a better level of accountability to the vendors. And that was just a little, it was beyond the level of expectations, right? So I am not a pool sitter. I'm not a flower arranger. I'm a real estate professional.
Oh, we had one who wanted us to change the kitty litter while they were out of town. And that's where I drew the line. I mean, I try to be helpful, but
yeah.
I was like, hire a pet sitter to do that.
Yeah.
Because I felt like they were scheduling these out-of-town trips knowing that there would be an open house and somebody would be there to check the water, the food, and the kitty litter.
I have cleaned other people's litter boxes, right?
Oh, I drew the line there. It wasn't me there.
Right.
And I said, you know what? No.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
It really is interesting, but I think that takes us kind of full circle in the conversation about the value that we bring to the table. And being very mindful and focused in our own minds to be confident in the value that we bring as real estate professionals, right? Now, yes, we're counselors and therapists and, you know, sometimes pool skimmers, right? And, you know, it's all in a day's work. If there's something that needs to be done to present the property, right? Like, as you said,
we're going to do it.
Right, we're going to do it. However, the expectations that we can set about what our role is and how our value comes through to them. We're going to be recording another podcast for the Institute, which is a state of mind for anybody out there that's interested. And we're going to be focusing with a negotiation expert on a similar topic on this, but really drilling down into understanding we can all day long come up with ideas of what we think our value is, but understanding what is valuable to the client, to the customer, is the next step in being able to effectively negotiate and effectively express and demonstrate our value, as opposed to just have a really nice color glossy book that talks about all the things that we do for them.
Sometimes I feel that in the upper tier, they're willing to pay for service.
That's right.
And the threshold is, in fact, lower than oftentimes in the lower tier, where they just don't want to pay for anything. And I feel like the higher up you go, the more they value their own time,
mm-hmm.
and they want a professional to handle everything turnkey,
right.
and they don't really want to.
And understanding quality. I had a conversation with clients just the other day about this whole conversation, and these folks, lovely people that we're going to be delighted to help them buy something here, but they're selling a home and they've been in that home for 26 years, right? So they were asking us soup to nuts, what's the whole process and what is this all about and how come these things are so different, you know, talking about different brokerages charging, you know, asking for different fees, right? Because we all know that real estate fees are negotiable.
We do.
That's
we
right.
do.
We
it's
sure
been repeated
do, right? we sure
a
do.
Lot lately.
However, we were talking about some of the different models that they might encounter as a result of the shift in the buyer brokerage relationship and articulation. And I actually likened it to the fact that if you need a coffee pot, you can get a coffee pot at Kmart, and you can get a coffee pot at Nordstrom. And it's about what you're looking for from the item that you're purchasing, right? And if you have the means to be able to afford a higher quality, then you're not going to be replacing that coffee pot in a couple of months, right? So odd analogies that sometimes work for people, but that was a great way to explain it. And so we don't have to be offering the least expensive services. We just have to be offering quality services that are going to be valuable to the type of people that we want to work with.
You've mentioned confidence quite a few times here, and I wanted to touch upon that a little bit because something I find very interesting, especially with luxury professionals, is that the distinction between arrogance and confidence, there's a fine line there.
There sure is.
But most of the ones who are successful in luxury don't cross that line.
That's right.
They tend to stay in the confidence zone, whereas I feel like sometimes I encounter agents at lower tiers where they have gone way past the confidence into the arrogance zone.
That's right. And usually you can tell them a mile away. And I think you also are more likely to find those that are confident in the types of scenarios that we've discussed of interacting with other real estate professionals, always looking to learn, looking to share. When you go in that arrogant thing, on that side of that thin line, I think often there's a sense that they know it all.
Right.
Or that they want to make everybody think that they know it all, right? And they don't ever want to be seen as less than perfect, or it's a really interesting thing to observe in this industry in particular. Certainly every industry has that, but I think it goes back to what did you say, your vibe
attracts your tribe.
Yes. Right, and that's the same thing. It's you are going to attract the type of clientele who have a similarity to your core values and your personality. And there's always going to be enough to go around.
True. Something that I really want you to share one of your stories because I've heard it before, but it's so funny. I wanted to talk about a specific marketing tool that is used in the upper tier, which is Broker Opens, and the concept of Broker Opens.
Oh, gosh. Which story are you thinking about?
Used cars.
Oh, gosh, yes. You're right. That one is pretty brilliant there. So my mother and I, who are business partners, had listed a $1 million-plus property that was on a lovely lot with a nice driveway, and it was across the way from a nice dock. So we arranged for an evening Brokers Open event, cocktail hour. We had some butler passed hors d'oeuvres. We had champagne for the sunset on the dock. Everything was lovely. And we had arranged for a partnership with DuPont Registry, is local to our market. And Mr. DuPont is a collector of vintage automobiles, particularly vintage race car quality, right? Like think Jaguars and that sort of thing. And so we arranged for those cars, several of those cars, to be displayed in the driveway, right? This was a really, really cool thing, right? And a very, very popular thing. This was really amazing. But was showcasing how this property would be attractive for an automobile aficionado, right? So the owners had been out of town, which made the perfect opportunity for us to have the event without displacing them, and their neighbors gave some sort of account of what the event looked like, and they said, "Now, we would never have let you have this event if we knew that you were going to have a used car display." And I thought, oh my goodness, and you are correct in remembering that we fired those clients.
They just didn't see the value.
They didn't. So we didn't tell Mr. DuPont what they had to say about his automobile.
I wouldn't
so.
Either.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in conclusion, I want to give you a couple of minutes just to say a couple of words of encouragement to agents who are thinking about taking the training with the Institute and possibly joining, and who are looking to get the designation eventually.
Absolutely. And I'm actually, to start that wrap up, I'm going to go back a little further. So I mentioned that I work with my mother, and she convinced me to get my license when I was between jobs in 1993. And I said, Mom, I'm never going to be a realtor. And she said, okay, just humor me. And I'll pay, she says, I'll pay to keep it renewed if you'll just do the CE. And so many years later, which is 22 years ago now, I found myself in that spot, right? And this is not a place where I had envisioned myself. But through that journey, I always saw my mother attending conferences, sharing, learning, and building her business. And so I kind of walked in with that mindset. And that's where I think it's important for those that are looking to build their business in this arena, just look for those opportunities and always be open to sharing. And I definitely encourage anyone who is interested in finding out more about the Institute to visit luxuryhomemarketing.com, and you can learn more about the training options and becoming a member. And those of you that are members of the Institute that are listening and haven't been into your member portal in a while, I would encourage you to go check out what's new, because the team behind the scenes is always adding more and looking for more ways to make membership in the Institute valuable.
I was in there today.
Excellent. So really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Institute that I love so much and to spend time with you here.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here, Tammy, and I look forward to seeing you again out there.
All right.